Follow along with me in your Bibles in Matthew chapter 7, and I'll be reading verses 15 through 20. Again, that's Matthew chapter 7, verses 15 through 20. Beware of false prophets, which come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravening wolves. Ye shall know them by their fruits. Do men gather grapes of thorns or figs of thistles? Even so, every good tree bringeth forth good fruit, but a corrupt tree bringeth forth evil fruit. A good tree cannot bring forth evil fruit, neither can a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit. Every tree that bringeth not forth good fruit is hewn down and cast into the fire. Wherefore, by their fruits ye shall know them.
Good morning. It's good to see everyone here this morning. We're going to talk about hypocrisy a little bit this morning, but I have to say this because I've talked to a couple of people already about this. Matt Bennett is speaking tonight, and you always try to get together with whoever is speaking because you want to talk about the same thing. It kind of happened one time several years ago, but he and I were talking, and Brother Griffin came for the meeting last Sunday. I had started one on evidences of faith, and he was talking about some of the historical evidences. So when he was finished, I didn't tell him that, but I was talking because I just even read up on some of the historians, and it's actually fascinating because there are several historians, Jewish and Roman, who talk about Christ and the Christians. And I don't want to repeat everything he said because one thing I know people always argue about, well, you can't find a lot of archaeological evidence. Well, you can't find that for 99.9% of anyone during that time anyways, unless they were a king in the earthly sense anyway. So that was fascinating. So I changed. I had something going, and I had talked to him earlier what his theme was for the week. So Friday, I almost wasn't here. Augusta's actually sick, and she's not here today. Almost stayed home with her. So I'm glad I came. So my lesson for today was going to be titled, If You Had One Day Left. And his was 1 month, so it was a little bit different. I wanted to talk about hypocrisy then today. I just wanted to throw that out because I maybe once but twice for it to happen. I don't know. I'm just glad he's gone now. But no, I'm joking. He was great. He did a phenomenal job, actually. But hypocrisy, we can find it used roughly 22 times in the New Testament, and most of those actually occur in Matthew. And I'm going to read from Matthew 23 as going to be the basis, I guess, of our text or of our study this morning. I'm not going to read through all of that, but Matthew 23 will reference quite a bit this morning and why it's so important, why he brings it up, and some of the aspects of it and what we can look at it today. So again, this morning we want to look at what hypocrisy is, some obvious, and I say obvious, it should always be obvious to us anyways, but what comes along with it, pride, a bad or wrong attitude that comes along, and then the fact that it's contagious and how it can spread to others as well. And then finally, what can I do about it? I'm going to try to be brief this morning as well, but again, if we go to define it, and this was from Webster's dictionary. There's a lot out there right now. But a person who puts on a false appearance of virtue or religion. A lot of them, even the standard dictionaries, will throw religion in there, and rightly so. A person who acts in contradiction to his or her stated beliefs or feelings. And it actually comes from the Greek word hypocrites, which means an actor, literally one who wears a mask, or someone who pretends to be what he is not. This was a quote I had found actually just online, and it says, holding up high moral, ethical, and social standards is very difficult because if one falls short of being a perfect example, one becomes a target and a hypocrite, albeit a well-meaning one. That's Mark Masters, and I'm not sure what New Dimensions is, probably some crazy thinking magazine or article or something. But if you think about that and the idea that when we're outside of these walls, when we're at work, when we're maybe with our friends, when they know that we're Christians, what are they at times maybe looking for? They're looking for you to slip. They're looking for you to fall. They're looking for you to make a mistake to be able to call you a hypocrite. And that's kind of what this is talking about here, that in every single day of our lives as Christians, we have to live up to the standard that God would have us to, and rightly so. But everyone's out there looking, and in this article, this quote, it says, albeit a well-meaning one when it talks about sometimes a hypocrite, but we want to be careful. And again, just as Zach read just a few moments ago, we think of the idea of a wolf in sheep's clothing, right? We talk about the outside versus the inside. Does the outside appear differently than the inside does? Do they both appear the same? Maybe vice versa? And that's something I want us to think about just for a few minutes this morning. Again, some more ideas of definition. Someone who acts in contradiction to his or her stated opinions. And then I liked this quote too. It says, our coach is such a hypocrite. He demands that we maintain a healthy diet, but seems to be always eating fast food after practice. And we can see that. Anytime we're out and about doing our things, we see that all the time. I've often thought, and there were a lot, I could go on 20 more minutes with this, but there's only one more I have here, but I've often thought about, I don't know if I could be a police officer who pulls someone over for speeding, and then maybe is when they're off duty, they're speeding or taking off somewhere themselves. That's just a weird feeling to me. But so again, everyone has an idea or a definition of a hypocrite. And we know at times those people. Am I one of them? And we all ask ourselves that question. Is it me? Is it you? Again, just like, are we the actor? Do we have that mask on? Are we playing that part? And in Greek culture and Roman culture, the ideas of theater and putting a mask on, acting somewhere different, is kind of where this comes from. But we see it on a daily basis. And again, you can easily probably point out someone at work, your friends, but what about each and every one of us in ourselves? Are we one of them also? And when we think about what hypocrisy means, there's even a couple different forms it can take. And I'm going to touch on some of those this morning. But one would be, it's a belief in something and then acting in a manner that is contrary to that or different to that belief. And the other one is looking down on others when we ourselves are wrong or are flawed. And we're going to look at a brief example that I'm actually teaching here Wednesday night that I think I'm going to use for the class, the Pharisee and the tax collector. It's a really good example of that, and I did a lesson on when I was talking about prayer at Waco just a month or two ago, and I thought it was a good example. It's a good idea to use. And that's the idea of just looking down on others when we ourselves are even flawed. So what are the problems then of hypocrisy? What are some of the things that we see that are, I said, obvious issues with it? And I think three on here. You'll probably think of more, find more, and that's fine. But there are several things at the kind of the basis of this. And the first one listed here would be, it's pride. Many times, pride is what drives that hypocrisy. Pride stands in the way of righteousness, of truth, of anything else. And we focus on ourselves. We focus on someone else. We focus on so many other things other than God and in His Word. And in Matthew chapter 23, verses 5 through 12, it says, Christ here speaking says, they do all their deeds to be seen by others. For they make their phylacteries broad and their fringes long, and they love the place of honor at feasts and the best seats in the synagogues, and greetings in the marketplaces, and being called rabbi by others. But you are not to be called rabbi, for you have one teacher, and you are all brothers. And call no man your father on earth, but you have one Father who is in heaven. Neither be called instructors, for you have one instructor, the Christ. The greatest among you shall be your servant. Whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and whoever humbles himself will be exalted. Again, there's nothing, I talked about history when I opened this up and what Brother Griffin was talking about this time last week as well. And we see throughout history that so many people are trying to put themselves on a pedestal, trying to puff themselves up, put themselves at the top. And that's even at times within the church. That's even with Christians. They want to put themselves, and they're just so concerned with, again, their deeds to be seen by others. And then a question we can all ask ourselves, why am I doing this? What's the reason behind it? Do I want to be seen? Am I, maybe if no one's watching, I don't do anything. I remember an instructor early on when I was doing training, and if the instructors would go into the bathrooms and there was a paper towel on the floor or tissue somewhere on the floor, everyone then had to do PT. You had to run the tower, you had to do push-ups, you had to do a lot of things, and they kind of kept track of that. So every time there was a break, the instructor would obviously be in last anyways, but they were checking the bathrooms. How many times have you walked into somewhere, whether it's a bathroom, whether anywhere else, and I get it, we don't want to maybe go to a public restroom and pick something up. Maybe that's a little different. But no one was around. Did you pick up the paper towel, the piece of paper walking down the hall that was on the floor? The banana peel that always shows up in cartoons that people slip on? You don't want someone to slip on that, right? We want to pick that up and do something. Or do we only do that when someone's looking, when they can see us to do it? And that's, in a sense, what he's talking about here, that they do all their deeds to be seen by others. It's about pride. It's about showing or seeing themselves, I should say. Now, Isaiah the prophet even condemned this in his day. And oftentimes in Isaiah 29, we hear when Christ uses this later on. Isaiah 29 verse 13 says, "The Lord says, these people come near to me with their mouth and honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. Their worship of me is made up only of rules taught by men." Now, Christ, even later on in Matthew chapter 15, used it when he was talking about the condemnation of the leaders of his day, obviously the Pharisees and the Sadducees. And as Brother Zach just read a few moments ago, the wolf in sheep's clothing in Matthew chapter 7. They come in, it could infiltrate the congregation. It could be among a group of us, whatever it may be, but they come in sheep's clothing. And what he's saying there is outwardly, they seem great and they seem fine and everything's good. But really, inside, what are they? Well, they're not that sheep. They're those ravenous wolves. Going back to the cartoons, you remember there were cartoons back in the day where it was like Tom and Jerry, and he would dress up, or Roadrunner. Yeah, remember Roadrunner and the Wile E. Coyote? And then Coyote would dress up as something to try to, again, get in and get the Roadrunner. And then the Roadrunner always defied gravity, and he would take off, and Wile E. Coyote would get to a certain point, and then gravity would kick in and take him down. And that's kind of the same idea. We're trying to sneak in and be one way. In Matthew 23, again from our text, the idea of whitewashed tombs is used in verse 27. Snakes and brood of vipers in Matthew 23 and verse 33. So we have different examples there of analogies and illustrations of what it can be. In Matthew chapter 6, verses 1 and 2, Christ says, "Beware of practicing your righteousness before other people in order to be seen by them. For then you will have no reward from your Father who is in heaven. Thus, when you give to the needy, sound no trumpet before you, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, they may be praised by others. Truly I say to you that they have received their reward." Again, going along with that same idea, are we doing good only when others are around, only when others are seeing us? Are we a different person when we walk into this building, in this auditorium, than we are this afternoon or this week when we go to work, when we're out in public, when we go to the stores, whatever we're doing? Do we put on a different person? Do we put on that sheep's clothing when we go as well? And in this idea of Matthew chapter 6, God had instructed the Jews to take care of the needy. And it was a duty of theirs. And he understood the ideas of the widows and the orphans and those who were in need. And he expected his people to do that. In Deuteronomy chapter 14 even, he commanded the Jews in the third year to bring tithe of their produce and store within their gates specifically to help the poor and those who did not have the need or means that were necessary to take care of themselves. And in Deuteronomy 14 says that they may come and eat and be satisfied. The Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hand, which you do. But then in the next chapter, he warns them not to harden their hearts against the poor. Don't look at it as something bad and shut them out and shut them away. He says, but you shall open your hand wide to him and willingly lend him sufficient for his need, whatever he needs. And again, it's that idea of willingly. Have you ever heard a forced apology? And you know when you hear a forced apology, kind of what it sounds like, where it's coming from. A lot of times we'll hear someone in the public, I should say, actors, sports figures, they'll some deed, something they said, something they did was wrong. Well, then guess what? They're going to get suspended. They're going to get fined. Something else is going to happen. Well, then at that point, they're sorry. And when they give their apology, it's almost like it's not really an apology. It's almost as if they have a script right in front of them, they're reading it. Maybe it stops or the wrong words were in there. And this is the idea, again, when he says willingly do it. Not only the idea of us doing good, but that we willingly do it. It's not from a sense of being forced to do it, that I better do this or else. That we want to do it. We want to do good. We want to be always doing good, whether someone sees us doing it or whether they don't. Again, are we a different person in there as well? But even in Christ's time, the Pharisees, though, turned this act of kindness into a drama, a show, almost like when I talked earlier about being actors, exactly what they were doing it. And again, he denounces those because he says you want to be seen by others. You want to be seen by men specifically in there. But where's the righteousness then in that act? Again, why are we doing it? And the only reward is that outward praise maybe they get from someone else. Maybe they're looking for that. They want to be, you did a really good job. You know, someone clapping or something for them. Look how great you are. And that's all they care about. That's the only reward they have. And again, he's talking about a giving here, a prayers. And again, the only reward he has is from men. Now, even though that person may pray, may give, may fast more often than others, doesn't mean God will necessarily reward him. And there's a couple reasons. First, God expects more of us. God wants more. He's not looking again for you just to do it only because he said it. Yes, we have commands. We are supposed to do certain things. But he's looking for that heart. He's looking for that, again, that willingness. He's looking for desire for you to want to do something. Have you ever, I'm trying to think of an example, I had a couple in there. Have you ever gone to, let's say, the doctor's office, and you can tell they're having a bad day, that they're just trying to hurry up, get in there, get you done, you know, get things going, moving along, trying to write something, whatever your condition may be, versus where they sit down and talk with you. There's two different kind of attitudes we have in there. And that's kind of what God may see from each and every one of us. So the first part is, one, God does expect more of us. But the second is that God sees everything. He sees more than what we do. He sees everything that we do. So even though maybe that paper towel has fallen, we'll go back to the banana peel, right? Because you'll slip and fall in a banana peel. But no one's around. You think no one's going to see you if you just walk by as if you didn't see it and you're going to look up and just keep going. But God knows. And again, whatever that may be, I use a silly example there. But God sees our heart. He knows what's in our heart. He knows what our thought process is. But for some reason, the hypocrite's going to say, no, he's not going to see it. He's not going to know what that is. In Luke chapter 12, verses 1 through 3, it says, in the meantime, when so many thousands of people had gathered together that they were trampling on one another, he began to say to his disciples first, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. Nothing is covered up that will not be revealed, or hidden that will not be known. Therefore, whatever you have said in the dark shall be heard in the light, and what you have whispered in private rooms shall be proclaimed on housetops. We think that we're going to hide everything. We think that God is not going to know. And again, he says, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees, which then he explains it's hypocrisy. But why? Well, he tells us why then, because nothing is covered up. Nothing is hidden. Everything will be seen. Everything will be known. Well, another thing along this lines is preachers can be especially vulnerable to this problem. Paul even encountered it here and says in Philippians chapter 1, verses 15 and 16, says, some indeed preach Christ from envy and rivalry, but others from goodwill. The latter do it out of love, knowing that I am put here for the defense of the gospel. Now, this idea comes up, and I had it printed out with some highlights, so I had to look it up again. But not too long ago, it was just a few years ago, have you ever heard of the televangelist Kenneth Copeland? Well, a reporter came to interview him because he was at an airport, and he was flying out in this nice, expensive private jet. And actually saw this, I think, when it even came out. And I got to say, he looked kind of crazy when the reporter was asking him questions. But when I read the article, I laughed. And I'm not here to try to make you laugh, but I just want to read up some of these points. And this is kind of an exaggeration, an illustration of what can happen. But it says, in the waning days of 2015, renowned televangelist Kenneth Copeland laid out exactly why he needs a luxury private jet to do his job. He says, I'm quoting him now, he says, you can't talk to God while flying commercial. It gets even better than that. He didn't want to fly on public airliners because it agitated his spirit. You can't manage that today in this dope-filled world. Get in a long tube with a bunch of demons, and it's deadly. And that's when the reporter asked him, said, you're calling these people demons, and he kind of got a little crazy in there. And, you know, she asked him, do you really believe that humans are demons? And then that's when he said, it's a biblical thing. And I apologize because I'm scrolling through this. I had it highlighted and it would have been better. He bought it from, there's a musician, Tyler Perry. And his reason for buying it was, he said, Perry made the plane so cheap for me, I couldn't help but buy it. But I want to say it was like $54 million. I don't know if anyone offers you something for $54 million, like, I can't pass that up. That's impossible. But it allows him to spread the message for the world. And, yeah, I'll stop with that because I'm just trying to now figure out where I had highlighted before in there. But he also used it to fly to his private vacation homes, the multiple ones as well. So if you have no idea, let's say, of Christianity, and you're seeing this interview take place, what does that say to you? How does that make you feel? Because, again, everyone's probably just lumping him in with all of Christianity, with everyone in there. So it obviously doesn't look good. And the same thing here, what Paul's talking about. What is the reason why we're doing it? He's specifically talking about those who preach or teach, but about each and every one of us. Everything we do. Remember earlier I used the example of if someone knows that we're a Christian, sometimes people are waiting for you to slip because then they want to jump on it. And it's kind of that idea as well. In Matthew chapter 6, Christ says in verse 2, not to blow a trumpet. Don't just announce what you're doing. Don't do something again and let everyone know. Because again, what's the motivation behind it? In verses 3 and 4 then of Matthew chapter 6, he says, when you give to the needy, don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving may be in secret, and your Father who sees in secret, he says, will reward you. Again, would you still do it? Well, the next thing is, hypocrisy is a reflection of the wrong attitude. He says, Christ says in Mark chapter 7, verses 6 and 7, well did Isaiah prophesy of you hypocrites, as it is written, this people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. In vain they worship me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men. It contaminates us, hypocrisy does. It changes us. It puts us in there because, again, he says, they honor me with their lips. And we see everyone saying, I'm a Christian. If you talk to someone, I'm a Christian. I do this. I do that. All of the time. But what are their actions doing? How many people do you know that call themselves Christians, but their action is something completely different? I'm hoping it's not the case here, but you see someone stumbling out of a bar, maybe on Saturday night. Do you hear someone's, I know someone, and they professed being a Christian, weren't a member of the church, they professed being a Christian, but they would also tell, they would laugh with and tell some of the dirtiest jokes you would hear. And guess what everyone did when they did that? Immediately jumped on him. And then again, the problem is, it almost paints, it's using almost a wide brush to paint there of a Christian. So we have to understand what we're doing and, again, why we're doing it. We might say we're a Christian, but our hearts can be far away from it as well. But we think about our obedience. It's then, okay, then by this idea, our obedience is defined by that conformity. Us doing it, just doing it there. And it's not complete. So we see the Pharisees trying to even recruit others as well. It's superficial. Sometimes we think, you know, so we take attendance here. Not every congregation does that. We take an attendance because we want to make sure if we don't want to miss somebody. If something's wrong, it's not the purpose of just counting how many times you're here. No one's getting a sticker with how many X's and O's you have on your name back there. And it doesn't make you a Christian if you have more X's than someone else. So X's are if you're here, O's if you're not. And that's not what makes you a Christian. But some people, sometimes it's that outwardly. That's the same idea when we said earlier that we're doing a good deed just for someone to see it. Well, maybe we don't think that's this on the same lines, but it really is. I'm just showing up. I'm just sitting in my seat. I'm just making sure I get marked on there. But it doesn't mean that inside I'm there. It's superficial. Well, I talked earlier about this, about the Pharisee and the tax collector. And again, I think I'm going to go further into that, I believe. Depends what Matt speaks on tonight. We'll see. But in Luke chapter 18, verses 9 through 14, we have the parable of the Pharisee and the tax collector. And in verse 10, he says, two men went up. Well, let me start in verse 9. He told this parable to some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and treated others with contempt. Remember, that's that other idea I said about hypocrisy. He says, two men went up into the temple to pray, one a Pharisee, the other a tax collector. The Pharisee, standing by himself, prayed thus, God, I thank you that I am not like other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even, he goes, like this tax collector. He's saying that right next, well, he's somewhat next to him. He says, but the tax collector, let me back up. In verse 12, I fast twice a week. I give tithes of all that I get. Great. But the tax collector, standing far off, would not even lift up his eyes to heaven, but beat his breast, saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. I tell you, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, but the one who humbles himself will be exalted. We've seen that a couple times as well. So again, this idea of the Pharisee, and again, both these men, they're standing. He says in his prayer, He's basically saying, look at all the good I'm doing. Now, I use this in the idea of prayer, and there's a lot we can take from this, even in our own personal prayers as well. We need to be careful at times in our prayers, what we're saying in there, what we're doing, what the purpose behind it is. But he's trying to praise himself in this. And he's saying, Lord, you know, I do all this stuff, everything you said, I do it and more, and I'm great. He doesn't say this there, but you're great. Again, other things we may add. But then the tax collector, and tax collectors were looked on very, very badly. Oftentimes, too, they would steal. They would take some of those earnings for themselves. They were extortioners at times. And remember, they were also working for basically the Roman government. So they weren't looked too highly by Jewish leadership as well because of that fact. They were working for Rome. But so he's saying, I do it not like this guy over here. But what's the tax collector do? He's humble. He says he beats on this was his prayer. And again, I'm starting to delve into that, but I won't. His prayer, and he says, Lord, be merciful to me, a sinner. That was his prayer. He didn't try to talk himself up. He didn't try to show that he was better than anyone else. He just said, I'm a sinner. I have faults. I have problems. But what does it say? It says in verse 14, Christ says, I tell you, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other. Remember, the Pharisee is saying, I'm doing all this and I'm doing it so well. The tax collector is just saying, I'm a sinner. I'm wrong. I need to change. I need help. But it says he went down to his house justified. And then everyone who exalts himself will be humbled and vice versa. What about us? We think about all of what we're supposed to be doing. And again, I said earlier, we want to be seen by it as well. In Matthew chapter 23, beginning in verse 23, a hypocrite is going to try to make distinctions with what God requires of each and every one of us. And they're going to try to, again, same thing along with the Pharisee and the tax collector here, the same story. They're going to try to make a distinction between themselves and others. In Matthew 23, beginning of verse 23, we read, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you pay tithe of mint and anise and cumin and have neglected the weightier matters of the law, justice and mercy and faith. These you ought to have done without leaving the others undone. Blind guides who strain out a gnat and swallow a camel. And what they would do is, and that idea is they would filter basically their water. They're trying to sieve out bugs in the water. And he uses this, obviously, analogy that they were too small to see, but the things they could see that they were doing that were wrong were right there, right in front of them. But again, a lot of times people want to make excuses. People want to talk themselves up, whatever it may be. But are we challenged to look deeper than what's on the outside? Are we challenging ourselves to be better on the inside as well? In Matthew, it's a little small there. Matthew chapter 23, beginning of verse 23. And again, we just read some of this as well. But then in verse 25, starting, it says, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you clean the outside of the cup and the plate, but inside, it says they're full of greed and self-indulgence. You blind Pharisee, first clean the inside of the cup and the plate, that the outside also may be clean. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you are like whitewashed tombs, which outwardly appear beautiful, but within are full of dead people's bones and uncleanness. What about us? If he were to talk about us, if he said, woe to us, and then put your name in there as well, what would the difference be between the inside then and the outside? Well, and he would also look at other forms of hypocrisy in the Sermon on the Mount. I'm not going to read all of these verses, But some of these here in Matthew 7, why do you see the speck that is in your brother's eye? But he says, then don't notice the log in your own eye. Just like the Pharisees, again, with the gnats, the small bugs. Or how can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye when there is a log in your own eye? You hypocrite. First take the log out of your own eye, and you will see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. And he's not talking about here, and a lot of times I think we get this confused, not saying if someone's doing something wrong to correct them, to say something. That's not at all what's being said here. But don't be so prideful that you don't even see what's going on in your own life. You don't even see what the problems are of sin and unrighteousness in yourself versus someone else. We have to take a look at ourselves. We have to look on the inside. What is the log in our eyes? What's going on with us? And Christ had many run-ins that I don't have time to go through even this morning with the Pharisees. And they knew what they were talking about. They were well-versed in scriptures. I have trouble memorizing things, especially numbers at times. But they knew what the law, they were very zealous. Remember Brother Griffin talked about that word, that zealous, just a little bit ago. But when they would look at the laws, they always looked for ways out. They always looked for loopholes that they could find. They weren't worried about someone's soul. They weren't worried about someone's condition. Again, they were just worried about how they were seen, looking at that praise. But we also need to know that hypocrisy is contagious. In Galatians chapter 2, verses 11 through 13, we read that when Cephas came to Antioch, I opposed him to his face because he stood condemned. For before certain men came from James, he was eating with the Gentiles. But when they came, he drew back and separated himself, fearing the circumcision party. And the rest of the Jews acted hypocritically along with him, so that even Barnabas was led astray by their hypocrisy. But what about us? What about the same thing? He's talking about Peter here in Antioch. And we think of this idea, we see this, in, especially, let's say, military organizations. What happens when a leader allows, let's say, something to go unpunished, something to go, someone's not doing something right, and maybe it's something so simple. You know, in the military and other agencies, they stress the importance of doing things right. Why do you have to make your bed? Why does your bed have to be made in a certain way? Why does it have to be perfect? Why is the drill coming in and checking to make sure everything's lined up? Why do you have to have certain things in certain ways in your uniform? And it's an attention to detail. Because if you're going to skip a detail on that, what happens when someone's life depends on it? Someone's going to get lazy. Someone's going to be sloppy in something. But if we allow it to happen, if someone starts murmuring and saying, you know what, I'm not going to do this. Maybe you get the most senior guy in the crew and he's saying, I'm not doing that. You don't have to do that. Well, what happens when the younger guy comes in and starts? He's looking up to someone. Well, that guy said to do it. And no one's punishing him. No one's doing it. So when that unit maybe goes into battle or something, maybe their weapons don't work. Maybe they don't have the intelligence they need. There could be different reasons, but we have to remember it's contagious. The same thing can happen in the church. If we just allow hypocrisy to go on and continue, how far will it go? Where will it grow? And again, I kind of mentioned this earlier too, that a leader, unless we expose that hypocrisy, it's going to continue. In Matthew 23 and verse 15, it says, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites. See a pattern here. For you travel land and sea to win one proselyte, and when he is won, you make him twice as much a son of hell as yourselves. That's strong. He's saying you make him twice as much a son of hell as yourselves. We have to expose it. Then in Matthew 23, verses 2 and 4, it says, the scribes and Pharisees, Christ says, sit at Moses' seat. So do and observe what they tell you, but not the works that they do. For they preach, but do not practice. They tie up heavy burdens hard to bear and lay them on people's shoulders, but they themselves are not willing to move them with their finger. We see it all the time outside of here. And hopefully we don't see it here. But what about us? Is that one of us? Is it me? Is it you? So what can I do? So it worked. I can acknowledge my own shortcomings, my own sins. What's wrong with me? Paul even said in Romans chapter 12, verse 3, not to think of yourselves more highly than you ought to think, but think soberly. Don't think that it's not going to happen to me. I say this all the time. If you look around, and you've heard, I know because I've said this, standing up here, it's easier to see. But Joe, I remember the photographs when you took when we built this building, and what was our attendance, like 300 and something, I think, at the time. But you look around and you see how many are gone. And not that they went to another congregation. They're not a Christian anymore. They left. Maybe we had seen it. Maybe we didn't. But do we think of ourselves more highly than we really ought to think? The next, we should focus on our service, not our situation, not our status, not what everyone else thinks of us, but what I am doing. What's my service, not about how everyone else sees me? And then we need to focus on the inside and not just the outside. How much time do we spend on the inside? And that could be prayer. That could be our personal study. And that can be so many other things. I'm looking at the slide and, okay, that's the last one here. So we all have to understand in ourselves what we are doing. Am I a hypocrite? What's inside versus what's on the outside? And if you're not a Christian, if you hear, believe, repent, confess Christ, and are buried and baptized with him, you can have that eternity. You can have heaven. You can have so much more than what this world has to offer. And it's not great. Look on the news. Now, if everyone saw the terrible events that started yesterday in Israel, even. Horrible. Horrible, absolutely horrible things. And that's just a part of everything else is going on. But is that what you want? Are those the things that excite you? Are those the things that you want to look forward to? Or is it more? Is it an eternity? And as Christians, remember this. We're not just wearing a letterman's jacket when we walk in that door, or that door, that says Christian on it. And then as soon as we walk out, we take it off. And you can only answer that for yourself as well. You can only say that, well, yes, I'm the hypocrite. That's me. Whatever your need, whatever you need to change in your life, don't put it off. Don't hesitate. Don't wait. Again, you never know what tomorrow may bring. Anyone has a need, please come forward now as we stand, as we sing.